don't need nobody but myself. Nobody but myself.
And what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Nights at the Roundtable, one-on-one with your boy, Manuel. I am here in Nashville, Tennessee with my girl, Krista Black. Thank you for making time to meet with me. I know you're busy. Krista has been friends with us for a long time. And most recently, you guys have always heard us talk about the marriage retreat that me and Ange keep boasting about and saying how much we've learned. And this is the person that put on the retreat, her and her husband, Luke. And so I thought, what an amazing way to just kind of like give you the more in-depth view of everything that we learned, because we could only say, you know, we can only recall the little bits that we could and tell people what our story was. But there was so much in-depth analyzation of the human psyche, of our hearts, of all those things that we haven't done any study on, minus just learning from you and then going and doing our own study. So I thought it'd be amazing to have you on. But before we go, you know, we get going, let's talk a little bit. Just give me however brief you want.
A quick intro?
Not even quick. Because your story is so dope. Like from, you know, touring with the Joe Bros to... Freaking,
they've resurfaced. I know,
and they're cool as hell.
I know.
Just tell us, about
people
your life.
People think I'm way cooler now. They're like, you know them.
You know them.
Like, yeah, Nick was my boss when he was 16. So he's grown up now.
That's weird.
I was 31, and I was taking orders from a 16-year-old.
You were 31 when you were touring with them.
Uh huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Damn. Did you ever feel like that feeling of like, I'm way more mature than you are?
He at 16, he was a 40-year-old in a 16-year-old body.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He was way more mature than me at 31.
I just saw the Amazon interview, the documentary. Did you see it?
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good. It made answered me like a lot them, of like, questions for me, because I did the last tour I did with them was their big world tour in 2010. And then they kind of split off and did their solo projects and everything fizzled. And we didn't really know what happened. And so that documentary answered a lot of questions. It was like, oh, you guys were in big fights and you had to go through your
stuff.
You had to go through your darkness in order to get to the truth of who you are.
And man, I think I was just talking to my boy about this. You know what? I love this hat, but I'm calling it. I'm hot. I was just talking to my boy about this, about like group dynamic or just dynamic period, just like relationships. Because we were like dissecting my last two groups, you know, obviously like group one fell apart and then the Pandas thing fell apart. And I kind of feel like it's an inevitability. Like when relationships happen, when two or more people are together, and they decide to grow, whether positive or negative, just grow their understanding of life and who they want to be. Mm-hmm. It always seems to be in separate directions.
Yes.
Like it's really rare because we think of ourselves first and what we want and what we feel makes us happy. And then we end up growing in that direction kind of without consulting anyone else.
Yeah. And it's really important. And this can be the same for marriages and married couples too, that you think, oh, we're so in love and we're going to grow in the same direction. But, you know, the tidbit of my story that I do love is, you know, I was in music for a long time, then wrote books that kind of came out of the Jonas Brothers tour, was speaking, and had built this illusion of who I was based upon what I thought the world wanted to see and hear. You know, especially the world we were coming in, you had to fit a mold in order to be loved.
Right.
And I'm a 3 on the Enneagram and I know how to play that part. And so there was a moment that I woke up where it was like, am I doing this because I'm making my parents proud? Do I even like what I'm doing? Am I being this person because I even chose this path, or am I just trying to fit into this mold to make sure people keep following me? And so Luke and I, my husband and I, he's so great because I am a conformer and I am an obliger by nature, have been for the first 40 years of my life, but he is a rebel. And so our marriage, you know, we had 10 years of what I thought was normal and I thought was good. And it was so toxic, man. Really? It was so toxic. And I just thought, this is the way that life is. And our traumas had bonded together. And it's funny because I saw that with the Jonas Brothers. They needed individuality to be able to come back together. And I think what we do as couples a lot of times is you lose your individuality in the midst of your togetherness. Mm. And you think we need to just be yoked together and there's all these codependent relationships, and you lose your sense of self in the midst of this either band or group or marriage. And so Luke is a rebel, and Luke blew up our marriage. It needed to blow up. I never would have done it. I never would have even known to do it. And he did it. He would say, I'd like screwed it up. I did it the wrong way. So he teaches people to blow up their boxes in a generative way that don't almost ruin their family. Yeah. 'Cause he like left for 9 months, and he needed to confront his darkness. And it's funny, 'cause that's what a lot of the Jonas Brothers did in that right, documentary. Yeah. They had to go live out their darkness, or to live out the parts of their lives like, I don't like you, I don't want to be with you, like, let me live out this portion of my ego, so that you actually have a contrast to find out that doesn't taste as good as I thought it did. Mm. What really matters to me is that we're all together in our individuality. And I loved on that documentary seeing Nick going, I had all this fame, and I would look to the left and the right of me, and I didn't have my brothers. And in couples, you kind of have to go through that. So we actually teach people to separate in a generative way, because some people, they're like, you did all the exercises where you stood yeah. across from Ange, and you could feel the energy between you. Mm-hmm. And all of that has science behind it now, which is great, because your heart is 60 times more powerful than your brain. And you have a biofield, you know, people would call it an aura, which people freak out about that. It's so new age. I'm like, go look at the Renaissance paintings. They had halos over them. It's a field around you that can now be detected by instruments, if you look at HeartMath Institute. So we had you and Ange and all of those couples standing heart to heart, resonating your heart together, syncing your heart together, aligning your energies together. They're real in the biofield, so that you can actually move beyond, we got in this fight, or we disagreed about this, or, you know, and you're able to come together and sync together through the energies of love, yeah. through the field of love. And so there's ways to be individuals and to do that. But most of the time, couples, individuals, we did, Luke and I were so toxic around one another that when we would get around one another, it almost felt like everything would collapse in on us. Hmm. You know, like it was two people living together with closed hearts. Our emotions were kind of collapsed in on one another. And I'm so thankful he was like, I can't do this anymore, even for our kids' sake. Because so many people stay together for the kids, and they're like, yeah, oh.
My parents did.
Yeah, like, oh, it's great. But they hate each other, and they don't work on opening up their bodies and their hearts to one another. I mean, we were just talking about sex in the old people's home.
Yeah.
And it's like off the charts. People are loving having sex. They lose the body inhibition. They're like, woo. And it's like this beautiful, yeah. you know, a lot of times free for all. They enjoy sex and they enjoy connection. But sometimes when couples stay together for the wrong reasons and don't work on their trauma bonds and the toxic emotional energy that they have between them, the kids feel it. And then you just end up having a miserable life.
Mm, between you two, what was the toxicity like?
Oh gosh.
What was your toxic? What was his toxic? Cause we talk about the Enneagram a lot on ours. Is he an eight? Is he an eight too?
No, I'm an eight. He's a nine with a really strong eight wing.
Okay.
And I'm a three with a really strong four wing.
I'm an eight.
And yeah, you
Ange,
are.
Ange is a nine. We believe. We keep thinking that she's a three, where we keep going, but she's like, I think I'm a nine.
But nines in health go to three.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. She's got some three in her.
Yeah, I'm a straight eight, and I'm learning.
What's your wing? Are you?
I don't know. I don't.
You seem kind of fun. You kind of got that seven wing.
I definitely have a, like, I'm hardcore. Like, I am assertive. I do take control of a room. I'm very much like that guy.
Those eights.
But
you're also like the life of the party.
Yeah, I can be.
I would say you're more seven than nine.
Even though I don't like being the life of the party, I naturally, people don't believe me when I say it, but I naturally do not like attention, even though everything about me demands attention. I'm on stage. Everything I do, how I dressed, how I do life.
Yeah, that hair and that hat don't demand attention at all.
No one's like, yeah, right. You know, why you dress the way you do? Why you whatever? And I'm like, yo, I do this for myself, for self-expression.
Yeah, and you love it. Yeah,
but
good.
I've never done karaoke. I've done karaoke once in my life.
Well, you can't do karaoke. You're a good singer.
No, I'm not even a great singer. It's not even that. It's that I don't want to be on stage if I don't have to.
Wow.
Ever.
That's the opposite of me. I'm like, where's the microphone?
Not me. Because I feel like everybody's looking at me. And I think this is why, though. I've done some work on myself. And I think it's because I tend to shy away from things that people accuse me of.
Oh.
Like bad sides of me.
So they're like, you want attention. So
you want attention.
So
I run away from it. Like in my group, when they would tell me, oh, you're all about the money. I got a business manager. I got other people to handle money.
Right.
I was so far away from it so that no one would think I am that bad thing that they think I am. And so
you're a rebel.
You're
a rebel.
So I just run away. But I've gotten to the point now where I'm like, F you. I do what the hell I want. If y'all think it, you think it. But for you guys, you know, the toxic side of what you said. So, I mean, in the Enneagram, they say, which I just started learning this, there's a shadow side which is just you and an unhealthy version of yourself.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So you're a three. What's the unhealthy version of a three?
Well, the unhealthy version of me I lived out. Listen, 40 is the best thing that ever happens to people. I'm telling you, life begins at 40.
Okay.
40 was like, drop the illusions, drop all of the patternings. And, you know, I think that, like I said, when I was little, my parents, everybody would make fun of me because the hearth of our fireplace was my stage. I had my hairbrush. Look at me. Daddy, film me. You know, and Krista, you always have to have the attention. And I believe that we come to the planet with a blueprint of who we're meant to be written in stone upon our hearts. Mm. And that life, you know, you build up this ego and these shadows. You know, the shadow is not bad. The shadow is what you can't see about yourself. Mm. So you build these illusions. I built up illusions to survive, you know, but I was meant to be seen. I was meant to be heard. It's who I am on the earth. I can't change that.
Right.
And so all of those, you know, the personality that I developed on top of that used that gifting in a manipulative manner.
Hmm.
So I used my gifting of talent to make people like me. You know, I'd go into a party and I would scheme like, how can I let them know what I've done, who I've toured with, how good I am at singing, how, you know, and just drop it here and there. So, you know, you use what you're meant to do as a manipulative tool to try to get people to like you or love you, which I did for the majority of my life.
And that was the end result for you. You wanted people to like you, not you just wanted to be braggadocious.
I didn't feel like I was lovable anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to use my giftings to try to get people to love me. And so my shadow three and the things that I couldn't see about myself was using the bigness that I'm meant to be to try to gather people to follow me. Maybe not because I was being my authentic self, but just because I'm good at what I do. I'm good at teaching. I'm good at speaking. I'm good at singing. I'm good at violin. So come, let me use those things as a manipulative ploy to get something from you when love is not conditional. Love is a give and take of, let me just be myself and you'll follow me because of that, you know? So my toxic three, I was like, my husband is so freaking powerful. And most of his power was shut down for most of his life. He got hit by a car at 7, a truck actually going 55 miles an hour. And he froze on that yellow line as the truck was coming at him.
Wow.
And it hit him. And he should have died. So he was stuck in, you have fight, flight, or freeze in your nervous system. And he was stuck in freeze. And usually in your 20s, it will start to manifest. And people will think people stuck in freeze are really cool. They're zen. They're peaceful. but his nervous system was so stuck that he couldn't pay a bill. He couldn't take out the trash. He couldn't.
Wow.
He was just stuck. And so I was, on my wounded side of things, a control freak. I was very good in masculine energy, which we talked a lot about at the retreat. The feminine is flow. It's magnetic. It lets things flow to you. The masculine is, I mean, just look at the penis and the vagina.
Right.
The vagina is like, it comes towards you. You need to be penetrated. It comes into you. The penis is, let's thrust.
Right.
That's masculine attack. Action. Yeah. I had masculine energy. Let me attack the world. Let me take over. And so I was in the more masculine pole in my relationship of control and making the money and doing all the things. And Luke was stuck in freeze in the more feminine energy, emotional energy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very empathic. He can know what you're thinking, feel what you're feeling, prophetic, psychic, whatever you want to call it. And so he had more of that flow towards him. So we were in the opposite energy roles of who we're meant to be.
Right.
I'm not saying that for everyone. I want to just speak for us, but I'm not meant to, out of my woundedness, be in my masculine energy of control all the time.
Right.
So our toxicity was, I ran the house. I was in control. I was in charge, and he hated it. And I hated it, but he was stuck in freeze. So I'm like, stand up, be a man. Ah! And he couldn't because he was stuck.
Could he even communicate that he was?
He didn't even know. He did not. You know, we didn't have the language for this. There's so many great books on trauma. Dr. Peter Levine, Waking the Tiger, and In an Unspoken Voice, that teaches you how trauma manifests in the body, and that's how he was frozen. So when Luke kind of went on his dark night of the soul to blow up the marriage that we had, it was truly a hero's journey, and there's books about it. Like, you know, it's so funny, like coming from Christian culture, and everybody really has criticized him for, you know, you cheated on your wife, you went out, you did all these things. I'm like, go read the freaking Bible, you know, go read what David had to do to get to his heart.
Yeah.
You know, killing Uriah and sleeping with, like, every major, biblical character, even Jesus, had to go in the desert for testing to face his ego, to have Satan come and go, hey, you bow down before me, I'll give you all this. He had to confront the ego, like, you could be this, you could have all of this. And men and women, we have to go through our darkness.
Mm-hmm.
You have to confront the shadow that you can't see to actually get to the light. You have to go through the night to get to the dawn.
For Luke, did you say, I don't know if you mentioned it earlier, but do you feel like his escape was because he felt like there was something better out there? Because I feel like men, we innately feel this. Like, we get what we've always wanted. Then you realize it's not always what it's all cracked up to be.
Yeah.
Because marriage is hella hard.
It's hard.
And then you start realizing nothing turns off. Because I was telling my friends this. I was like, am I the only dude that when he got married, and I don't know if this was the Christian culture in me, that thought, I legitimately thought everything would shut off.
And you just won't be attracted to another.
I just wouldn't. It would just be me and Ange, and it would be so easy because the Lord is with us. And da da da. And I'm like, shoot, when we got married, nothing changed.
No.
Except this insane amount of responsibility.
Yes.
Conviction and accountability. Mm-hmm. To which I still had the same thoughts. You still notice the same pretty people,
yes.
But you just have this heavy weight.
I'm not
of,
supposed to.
I can't do that.
I shouldn't.
Yeah. And that weight, I feel like, makes men feel trapped.
Yes.
That they feel like, oh, I can't do this. I can't do this for life. Like, I want to roam. I want to check out this. I want to spread my seed, do my thing.
Yeah.
It's like innately in us biologically. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Is that what you would say, like, he was feeling, or was he more running away from the fact that you were controlling the house and he was just like, fuck you, I'm out?
Well, that 100%. And it was, we were so toxic around each other, but in a very codependent, toxic way. So, you know, we talk about this. Harville Hendrix wrote Getting the Love You Want. We talked about this a lot in the retreat, how you, he studied divorce for 35 years and you attract the person who's going to best help you recreate your childhood wounds so that, because we're evolving as a species, you're evolving as a human. So you, if you've got stuck abandonment issues like I did from childhood, deep abandonment issues, I attracted Luke who shut down when I would get controlling. And what did I feel every day? Abandoned. Every day of my life. And so then my inner child comes out. I feel abandoned and I would try really hard and, you know, let me be more loving, let me be more kind. He would continue to turn away from me. And then my anger would come out. My rage would come out. How could you abandon me? How can you act like this towards me? So then what did I feel like to him? The anger that I had, like, wake up, felt like the truck every single time, the truck that hit him. So we were a perfect match of woundedness to recreate our childhood to where our inner child is coming out and trying to run the ship. My inner child, 100% with him, was like, you're abandoning. And, you know, you're not loving me the way I need. And I just thought that was normal. And we would go around this mountain again and again and again. And it just got, and it wasn't always, but it got to the point where I think he was like, I am trapped in this cycle and I don't know how to get out of it. And so, yes, he did have to, he went and he did, he slept with other women and he's like, worst decision of my life. I had it so good with you. I'm like, yeah, you did. But he went and slept with other women. He was a virgin when we got married. We were super Krish, waited till marriage. Right. And so I think there was a part of him that always was like, well, good Lord, I've never even had sex with anybody else.
Right. Yeah.
But the thing that he needed to escape was not, it wasn't me. He always loved me. He was trying to escape the toxic bonding that we had developed over 10 years in a marriage. And usually around the 10-year mark, that's when people kind of start going crazy. You start seeing people like, do I really want to do this for another 10 years? You know, and they separate or they haven't worked on who they are. Now, to your point about your masculine drive of attraction. So the way that Luke talks about this is, and I never expected him not to be attracted to other women. He's very attractive. Like, you know, my husband's really good looking.
Right.
And women are, he's very like sexually attractive. I always see women looking at him. I see him noticing other women. But to me, it is not the pull of like, he notices a beautiful woman because I noticed her too.
Right.
Like she had a great rack. Yeah. It was awesome. Her ass was amazing.
Yeah.
I noticed it too. But what I acknowledge is when he looks away and like the way that he lives his life now is the feminine is beauty. We are beauty. We are round and soft and magnetic. And the masculine is penetrative and it is electric and it moves forward. And so that feminine, if it's in a woman's body and she's attractive either with lust, because the energies of lust are different than the energies of just beauty in a woman's body. It comes out of different energy centers in the body. But
when you say lust, is that what we would call sexy? Like
that's what we would call like
they're oozing and like
so
I would like to have sex with that person.
Yes. Like, or just I would like to have non-relational of just a
right.
Like let's just screw, you know, that is different than I'm appreciating this woman who is radiating in beauty.
Right.
So that's a woman who is just like, she knows her sexual energy and she coerces men, you know, like I look good. I'm going to pull you towards something that's not real. That's just lustful, you know? And that's out there too. And when he looks away at that woman, I'm always like, thanks. Like, it wasn't that he looked, because we both did.
Right.
It was that he looked back towards me, the woman he loves. Now, what I think women need to own and the responsibility towards is that a lot of us as women hold bitterness and resentment and hatred in our bodies, and it's not attractive.
Yeah.
And so as Luke's wife, my love for him is to become the safest place that I can be so that he might look at another woman, but I'm the safe place that he comes home to. Mm-hmm. And I think as women, when we're in that wounded inner child, and I've done this where you're like, you know, she's prettier than I am, or the jealousy, yeah, that doesn't feel good to a man. And so then the man, the masculine, feels guilty for looking. But what if as a woman you went, okay, all day long he's looking at beauty and he's just appreciating it. You know, because it nourishes you as a man, like breasts nourish men.
Right.
Like boobs, they're awesome.
Yeah.
They're great. And and you look at them, and instead of being like, let me shoot shame through my circuitry and I shouldn't do that, let me shut down who I'm meant to be as a man, let me shut down my sex drive. Instead, let me look at that because we're both looking at it and I'm pulled towards it. Let me look at it. Let me appreciate the beauty. And then let me pull it in my body and go back to my wife.
Yeah.
And that's different because it's never going to shut down. So then you appreciate the flow and the magnetism and the beauty of women that nourishes you as a man. And you don't stare and you don't fantasize about it. You let it nourish you and then you look back.
See, that's interesting because I remember I don't know if I did a video or something and I asked women or asked people, I was like, you know, if you felt like that was disrespectful. And of course, you know, there's a lot of church answers that it's just like, that is not good. It's unholy. It's what it is. And I'm just like, I don't know anyone that can see. I mean, we live in LA, so I can't go to the gym without looking out. Like every woman in there is super fly. And you know what? The dudes are hella fly too. Oh, and I'm like, oh, this is a good looking dude. That's a good looking, that's a good looking girl.
Yeah.
And it would always affect me. And I'd be like, man, this is weird. And I remember when I was in Bible college, I thought I was super spiritual because I was like, Jesus, take away this drive. Take away this whatever.
Take away my God-given masculinity. Yeah,
because I saw it as shame.
Take away what you gave me.
Exactly. What you're saying. I saw it as shame.
Yeah, of course.
And my president got up and he was like, it was for me because he was like, for all you guys praying away your sexuality or your drive,
your sex drive.
He's like, that's stupid. Just call it like it is. And I was like, damn, bro, that's hard.
Good.
And he's like, you can't pray away something that's biological that's intended for good.
Yes.
What you have to do is just not start the engine. Just don't start the engine.
Yeah.
Because once you start it, and he, in a roundabout way, he was like, you know, men, that's why we get a thing where if you stop before you're done, there's your body's angry with you. It's what we would call blue balls, but it's like your body's saying like, bruh, why'd you start something you couldn't finish?
Right.
So his thing was like, just focus on the not starting. Like if you know that, you know, you can't handle this situation, don't step into it so that you don't have to like go against biology. It's never going to go away. And I don't know why, for some reason, when we got married, like that was the thought. It was just like the holiness was just going to kick in and you're just never going to. But it's not like, it's almost like reflex. Like
no,
when you
it
see
is.
Someone,
it's who
I'll
you're
literally,
meant to be.
I will literally do this, Krista. I'll see somebody, I'll be in LA and I'll be whatever, or different places or whatever. And I'll see somebody. And if she's like beautiful and attractive, I will literally be like, shit. Angry at God. Like, how do you make something that fly to just walk around and be in front of us? Like, I would literally get like angry, like whatever. And not that I don't think my wife ain't fly, but I'm just like, what the hell? Why is this person? And they're just oozing what you were talking about. I think, like with me and Ange, I would always tell her, I'd be like, babe, there's people that just ooze this confidence in their sexuality. Yeah. And to me, I've always been with people like that. So when me and Ange got married, Ange was not that at all. I threw away all my initial inhibitions, my initial criteria for marriage, because I was like getting everything that I wanted, quote unquote, and it was all just failing, like failing. Mm-hmm. And so I started questioning, like, what if I don't know what I need? Like, I know what I want. What if I don't know what I need? And so when I met Ange and I heard the Lord say, I trust her, when I was praying about it, And I was like, well, damn, Jesus, if you trust her, I trust her then. Mm. Like, I can trust her. Because mm-hmm. I didn't hear him say, you can trust her, Manny. I heard him say, I trust her. And right. That was like God co-signing her. And I was like, mm-hmm. okay, whatever this person has, mm-hmm. I need in my life.
Right.
Like, it isn't about chasing all this other stuff.
Right.
So we maybe like 3 years, 4 years into the marriage, then I started recognizing, well, probably actually it was like last year, a little over a year, I was doing this cocktail of like, as a man, trying to supplement what I really wanted, that feminine, because mm-hmm. I didn't want her to feel bad. I knew there was trauma. I knew there was things that she's gone through. Mm-hmm. But the last thing I wanted to do is add to the trauma and make her feel bad for not feeling feminine and sexy and mm-hmm. wanting to be all this thing. So I would just try to figure out a little dose of fantasy at the gym, right. a little dose of fantasy while I'm out, mm-hmm. get my nourishment from women who are like super sexy and super whatever. And I'd just be like, wow, what, that would be amazing. That's pretty, that's dope, you know? And then come home and support my wife. Like, so whatever you need, I'm here from you, theory. You know? Like, it was so noble until I realized, you know, I had a situation where I did end up being attracted to someone and being like, oh my God, you can be attracted to more than one person. And it was like mm-hmm. literally happened by accident, just a complete accident.
Right.
And then I realized, oh, I guess I do really love and need my wife to be feminine and into her sexuality and just, mm-hmm. and more so because I'm not the type that can have sex with just like a body.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not that dude. I have a lot of friends that are like, whether she wants it or not, I need it. That's what we got to do. And I'm like, oh, you don't want it? Okay, cool. I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't just have you sit there mm-hmm. and just not, mm-hmm. it has to be this thing of like fire to me. Mm-hmm. And I remember telling her, I was like, babe, I think we need, like, I need you to own your femininity. I need you to like feel mm-hmm. sexy. Cause I would ask her if she feels sexy and she'd be like, eh. When I'm being funny.
Yeah.
Which is most of our, you know, bedroom time. She would be like goofy when yeah. she was trying to be sexy.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't know how to take you.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what I'm used to. Mm-hmm. I'm used to women who are like oozing and sexy.
Right.
They're just like, look at me. I'm about to you up. Right. You know?
Right.
And that crap makes me come alive. Mm-hmm. And so enter in us going to your retreat, and it completely changed the course of our marriage, because then she found her femininity and she came back like a different person. And in the retreat, it was crazy because she was so, she was getting into it. And she thought I wasn't going to get into it. And at first I was really like, I don't really go to things like that, but I love you guys. So I was like, I'm gonna go. Every time we talk, it's awesome. So I'm just gonna go. I'm gonna be open.
When we got in, stretch, isn't it?
When we got in with the guys, if y'all don't know, okay, there was like 30 guys in there with Luke. And Luke has us close our eyes. We sit in chairs. We sit apart from each other, which is weird. When I tell my friends this, they're like, what? Mm-hmm. We were looking into another man's eyes, just staring.
Yep.
For like minutes at a time. Like at the end of it, it was like probably like 45 minutes.
Oh yeah.
And he has us start talking about our pain, the past, yeah. the wounds. Mm-hmm. Now, the words and the anger that was in that room, I've never heard so many, yep. I hate you, motherfucker.
Yep.
Like just yep. screaming at the top of their lungs. And I'm just sitting there like not screaming because literally, like, I've dealt with my anger. Mm. I've had to deal with my anger because I had a blow up like that at church. Mm. Where I was at church and I was like, fuck! And they had to send me
good
home.
For you. That's a great place. They sent you home.
They had to send me home because they're like, whatever's.
That's the place to do it.
Exactly.
And they send
but
you out. Good
pastor
Lord.
Was like, you seem like you're a little bit charged. Just go home, cool off, you know, whatever. Gosh. So when I was in there, I was taking the energy in and I was looking at my partner and I was like, bro, I'm here with you. I'm not trying to not participate. I've just dealt with my anger. Mm-hmm. So don't think that I'm not in here.
Right.
I want to take this all in. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of quiet. So when it was his turn to scream, he just more like looked at me dead face and was like, why'd you leave me? Because we had to speak to their pain. So if it was the father, if it was your wife, the other mm-hmm. person became that. Mm-hmm. And he was just talking to me and he was like, why'd you leave me? Oh. Why weren't you there for me? I started bawling. I was just like crying. And I was like, I'm here, bro. I'm so here.
Oh my God.
It was so intense. And then from that, we move into the with the women. And then you had them dance for us. And they were dancing in front of each other. 30 women dancing, like sexy dancing.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
That was amazing. And it changed our freaking life. And now Ange is like, next level, and our sex life has gone like,
oh, that makes me so happy.
It's so crazy, but
that's amazing.
All that to say, yeah, like your wounds or what you're talking about now. I think though that's she's amazing. Still doing the work for yeah. that wound, for the wounds that you were talking about to heal.
Yeah, I mean, I had a very, I think Ange and I bonded over our hard feminine masculine shells,
right?
When we first met, probably gosh, it had to be 10 years ago, mm-hmm. 9 years ago. But yeah, you know, I gravitated towards women who were like me, who were ball busters.
Yeah.
You know, we
celebrate
kick ass
that.
And take
I feel like our society does
totally
at this point.
Do.
That's boss. Yeah. That's feminist. That's.
But you know, in my opinion, every pendulum before it balances in the middle has to swing to a really opposite extreme.
Sure.
And so we've had women who are just as good as men in a lot of these jobs, who were forced to just be moms and wives and subject to the decision of men and their husbands, and they couldn't provide them for themselves. So in order for women, anytime you're leaving something unjust, like Richard Rohr talks about this, of all these people who are angry and they're leaving like the institutionalized Christianity, he's like, the anger is important because it gives you the courage to leave what you can no longer be a part of. You know, you have to have that anger to leave the box that is unjust or that isn't right or that isn't whole. So the feminist movement that was like, burn the bras and screw the men, and you know, that needed to happen because women needed to express their anger of not literally having legislation over their bodies for thousands of years.
Right.
We had to have sex when men wanted to have sex. We had to have as many babies. There was no contraception. You had to have as many babies, you know, it just, and that's in our epigenetics. You can trace it back at least four generations in our epigenetics, you know, and this is why, like, I mean, I think reparations for even the Black community are so important in America because it's in their cellular level. It drives me crazy when white people are like, get over it. I'm like, it's in their cellular level of their great, great, great grandparents of what we did to them. Hmm. And they can't just get over it. And the same is true for women. It's in our epigenetics of not having a body that was our own and not being able to support ourselves. And so the anger that breaks out of the box, it will be short-lived because nobody can sustain a movement in anger and hate.
Right.
And so I do see people like Ange and I doing the work to go, we did it. We were badasses. We were successful. We were hard. We could do it just as good as a man. I could change my tire. I can, you know, and you almost, even your body takes on the shape of that penetrating masculinity hardness, which is why a lot of us couldn't orgasm for years, or we couldn't get into that softness because we had to be so hard just to ball bust our way through. But now that we have a seat at the table, now that the women's voice is being heard, I see a lot of women who are like, I don't like myself in this energetic role all the time, you know, and when you're at the office and when you're running the corporation and when Ange is out on the road, she does need to be in her masculine energy that's, you know, successful and people love her. But she's learning practices in my women's circle to now have that transition period where she's moving back into her feminine flow and balance, especially in her relationship with you. Mm-hmm. So it's not like masculine energy is bad in a woman.
Right.
It's just that for women who are meant to be feminine and live in our feminine flow. Because when you live in your masculine energy, you cut off your feminine intuition. We cut off that gut level instinct that we have that's connected to spirit, that's able to see beyond sight, that's connected to another realm. And so it's, you know, it can be very logical and rational. And we're moving back into that balance where we have that developed masculine, but we're also moving back into our body and we're developing that feminine flow. But I think the same is true with men. Like, men needed this we needed to get in touch with our feelings and our hearts and maybe stay home with the kids, but I don't really like it.
Right.
You know, I feel right. emasculated.
Yeah.
So that you have empathy for both sides, because what we're looking at is not for me to be in my feminine and for you to be in your masculine. We're looking at men and women to be in a balance of their masculine feminine flow.
Right. Because we all have both.
We have both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's interesting, because I know it's not the best. I mean, my friends would always make fun of me because I was definitely the most feminine in our group.
Right.
Feminine meaning I like clothes.
Right.
I like rom-coms,
you
know.
Music.
I like you yeah, feel. Like I'm super yeah. like I like to be the right. romantic of it all, but I used to see that as a negative until one day I realized, man, but all you hard dudes, like you have no, like I'm usually talking to women who are dating someone like that.
Right.
And there's no connection. There's no depth. You kind of, you don't have any like communication. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because with Ange and I, she is not the communicator. I'm the communicator. You know, she's very much like a guy in that sense. Like
right.
I'll try to talk it out and she'll shut down.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be like, yeah. after a certain time. And I'm like, man, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Like, and I didn't know what was going on. I just felt like she was just being mean until we started discovering this whole idea of masculine and feminine and what was really happening inside like her mind. And I really respect and enjoy the fact that she's doing the work now mm-hmm. to try to figure it all out. Cause I think there's a lot of people, we had a question in the sex podcast that we did, which hopefully these people have already heard at this point. and there was a lady, and this was so interesting to me. There was a lady that said, hey, my husband has told me that he's not really in love with me anymore and not attracted or whatever, but he still wants to stay married because he really likes what we have. And she goes, is it weird that I'm okay with that? And everyone at the table was kind of like, well, at least the girls. Was like, nah, maybe she just doesn't know what's out there. Maybe she doesn't know whatever. And I was like, or maybe she knows what's out there and knows that she'd rather have a really good friendship
yeah.
than deal with the crap of everything love and chasing love comes with.
Like How maybe old is
that, she was know? Like in her 50s.
See, that's normal though, because I feel like as America, as culture evolves. So America has been through three main stages of kind of marriages. And when it first started out, women I had to completely rely on a man to eat.
Right.
You know, like you had to go cook or kill dinner so that you had to hunt so that you could come back and gather and, you know, and I mean, it's this whole evolution where, did that stop? Oh no, it didn't stop. Okay. I thought it stopped. It looked like it stopped for a minute. It's just going real slow.
Is it though? No, let me check real quick.
I was like, oh,
nope, still
okay. Sorry.
That's good.
Sorry.
I'm glad you noticed it.
I was like, we've done that so many times.
Yeah,
I've been but women had to rely on men. And then we moved into another phase where women, they wanted men to be good providers, but they also, you know, there were like 17 things on a list of characteristics and qualities. And love was like the fifth on it, because you wanted to make sure that you had a house and you were taken care of and you had cars and your children were taken care of. Now we're in the phase where women, they're fine being broke as long as he can connect to his heart and they can connect to their feelings.
Wow.
And so it's evolved, and it is continuing to evolve, because we are evolving as a species. You know, women are becoming more in touch with their masculine side, and we are running companies and having babies, and men understand the empathy and the compassion of the child rearing, but they're still in their masculine. So everything is shifting. And what I think now is happening is that couples, because, you know, our parents' generation a lot of them did stay together
yeah.
because it was economically beneficial. They weren't fighting too badly. You know, there's just a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people who are together who may not feel like we're exploding in love.
Mm-hmm.
Our generation is different. our generation is more like, if this feels toxic, we want out. And there's stages of a loving relationship. So we talked about this at the retreat, but biology tricks you, because when you first are sexually attracted to somebody, and it's not just that lust of I want to screw and leave. It's like, oh my gosh, this could be the one. You know, within an eighth of a second, whether or not that person is going to best help you, you know, recreate your childhood wounds so that you can evolve and heal. And biology will release so much oxytocin in your system. And if you measure like the biofield of somebody in love, it's literally like a radiant light. Your radiant circuits, which is your circuitry of joy inside of your body, they're flowing and everything is amazing. Same for the guy and the girl. You're just in love, but you're not very grounded in your love. So then you get into your relationship, you start, the oxytocin about a year and a half in wears off. And you're like, oh my God, I married my dad. Or, oh my gosh, right. I married my childhood bully or whatever it is. And the oxytocin blinds you so that you will get in a relationship and a covenant where you can actually work out this stuff. So then once that wears off, that's when the real inner child deep shadow work begins, where you have to start owning, where do I not know how to love? Where is this healing something in me? And that's the work. Now, most people don't know this. We did a podcast with Michaela Bohm, who trained us, and she's a trauma specialist and a relationship specialist. And she's like, isn't it interesting that the one thing that everyone wants, which is a relationship, we have no training for. You just get in on it with a wing and a prayer going, it'll end up like the rom-com, the end of, and you get into it with no training of the thing that defines everything. Your relationship, your partnership, your marriage, your committed relationship determines the energy that you go about your business, the energy that you have to raise your children, the energy that you have to show up in the world. And yet we have no training on the most important relationship that we ever have. We'll go to school for engineering and music, but we won't go to school for love. So then you get into these patterns and you think something's wrong with you, or like we've lost our sexual spark. There's nothing wrong with you. That's actually supposed to happen, because you have to then individuate, find out who you are, and then love is actually a practice. And that's what we teach at the marriage intensive.
Yeah.
Love is not, I had my zing, and people get addicted to the zing. That oxytocin will wear off with every person. That's why if I bail and I try something new, that oxytocin will wear off too.
Yeah.
And I will have a reality that, wow, your shit stinks too, you know? Yeah. But that's where the real inner work begins, where you get to choose, how do I learn to love myself? How do I grow up my wounded inner child? How am I living as a victim? And then when you come back together, so a couple that you're in a toxic, codependent, traumatized relationship. Your biofield is completely collapsed onto you. My biofield, which by what I mean by that is your heart emits an energy. It can be detected and it completely collapses. So when you get around one another, it might go and it collapses on one another. And there's no connection. And you go, I don't feel connected to them anymore. I'm not in love with them anymore. That's because you're not practicing love. You're not practicing opening your heart and actually doing the work to what does love feel like between us. So then there's a third stage in relationships. That is when you practice love. Like Luke and I have practices. We did them this morning.
And when you say practice love, you mean there's actual practices. You're not talking about
just
sex. Keep trying.
No.
It's like
we
actual.
Stand in front of one another and open our hearts and we practice eye to eye, just like you guys did. Yep. And we do these
movements.
We still
do.
Yes. And you literally sync up your energies. You sync up your biofields together, where Einstein talks about quantum entanglement, where or spooky things at a distance, where, you know, he would have two cells that have come together with something like really impactful. If you take like the mouth swab of somebody and you take it miles away and you show that guy, say he'd been in war, and you show him video images of war, the mouth swab of his saliva miles away will react at the same frequency as his you know, what's happening in real time. Really? This is why sex, this is why I actually advocate not don't have sex because God will be pissed at you. It's because like Native American cultures, indigenous cultures believe that when you merge liquids, you merge fluids with somebody, it can take 7 years to get them out of your system. And so it's literally like, it's on a quantum level. I love quantum physics for dummies, but you know, you quantum entangle with somebody and then you're linked. So if you're linked in a negative, toxic aspect, when you go out, you're linked in that negativity. But when one person, and it doesn't even take both, but when one person starts to open their heart and to practice love, it can open up the other partner. You know, I get a lot of wives that are like, my husbands don't want to do the work. I'm like, then you do the work. Yeah. Because you're yoked. You're linked together on a quantum level, and you can do the work to actually begin to unlock him. And then if he stays that way and you want to leave, then okay, you know, make that decision then. But don't make the decision until you're doing the work to open up your body to love and begin practicing love. So Luke and I practice love, and they've been able to detect and show that your biofield is like the beginning when you are in love. It's your radiant circuits, which show the circuitry of joy. They're flowing. You're alive. You're amazing. But there's a groundedness to you that goes so deep. And I think that's what everybody's looking for. They're not just looking for the quick fling or the let's stay together because, you know, it'd be more expensive to divorce. You're looking for, I'm alive, I'm in joy, and I'm grounded. And Luke and I practice that on a daily basis, and everything has changed. Our kids are different. Our finances are different. I look different. You know, I'm more at peace and at rest in my body. I have more energy because we are in sync because we practice it.
Yeah. And so for you, it's the eye to eye thing. I know me and Ange do it. Like, yeah, we'll,
eye to eye, heart
whenever
to heart.
She feels like we're not, or she feels like the anxiety before, she's just be like, I'm anxious. I'm anxious. And she'll just tell me and won't know what to do. But now she's like, I'm anxious or I'm leaving you or whatever. And she'll be like, let's, you know, let's connect.
Let's link up.
Eye to eye.
Yeah.
And we'll stand wherever we're at. We'll take however long, whether it's 1 minute or whether it's 5 minutes, and we'll just stare. And usually when we stare at each other, I'll just start smiling. She'll start smiling. And we're just like, yeah. Sometimes it's just interesting. I feel, I'll start feeling uncomfortable. I'll feel good and then I'll feel uncomfortable because I'm like, oh, I have to do this more. Because it's making me feel uncomfortable, which I shouldn't because I'm not. Yeah. I don't feel uncomfortable with her.
Yeah.
But I'll feel uncomfortable maybe because I'm just a dumb guy and I'll just be like, oh, you know? But I always love connecting.
Intimacy is scary though.
Yeah.
Intimacy is vulnerable.
Yeah.
And so it's hard in the beginning to let someone see all of you. And that's what the you know, the connection exercises do. So like a simple exercise that we tell people to do is to stand in front of one another about arm's distance. Don't touch. Left eye to left eye, because the left eye is said to be more receptive and helps you link up. And begin to relax the muscles around your heart and to feel one of four emotions, either compassion, care, gratitude, or appreciation. Gratitude's usually the easiest for people. But what you do is you just don't think it. It's not a cerebral thing. It's like, I will move usually towards the birth of my daughter, Loxley, because it was the best birth. It was the easiest. And I remember pulling her out and I'll feel the way I felt inside of my circuitry. And then Luke will hold that feeling of gratitude. And remember that the heart is 60 times more powerful than the brain. So as you open up your heart to gratitude, what it's doing is your vagus nerve, which links your brain and your heart, you're linking that back up, back and forth. It's sending a signal up. And what that's telling your body, it's sending the signal of this is love. This is what love feels like. So it opens up your brain and your heart together. Your hearts are syncing up together with that resonance, and you're in a coherent state. So if you look at incoherence, if you look at like a waveform, it's like a crazy, it's like, you know, that.
Yeah.
Where the sound wave is recording, and if I'm speaking, it's big and it's crazy, and then it's flatline. A coherent state is where the wave, the top of the wave and the bottom of the wave, are always the same. And it has this power to it, this truly resonant power, where it will measure out if a room full of people get in a coherent state. And this is what I think worship is. People are like, God showed up. I'm like, no, you got your heart and mind in a coherent state where you were actually able to experience the God that's in every cell of your being. You just were completely unaware of it.
Right.
It's like you didn't fall from the sky. It's in you, and you linked your heart and your brain. And when you get with other hearts that do that, it can be measured for miles. Like quantum, on a quantum level, it's quantifiable. It has a measurable metric. So what you're doing with your partner when you practice that gratitude, your body goes into a homeostasis state that literally 1,300 different positive chemical reactions flood your nervous system. And they can be, it can last for up to 6 hours.
Wow.
So it's literally health, like a cheerful heart is good medicine. It's literally it's health and vibrancy to your bones, to your cellular level when you're practicing love with your partner.
But before that, do you think, because this is, when I try to get people to think this way, usually the first thing that stops them is the fact that they're still pissed at their partner, or they still have a list of
offenses.
Things
that have
offended them, and it's built up. I had a conversation with my homeboy just yesterday. And I asked, and this was a creative working relationship. And he told me, I asked him if he had, if there were things that this other person has done to make him mad. And does he remember them? He's like, yeah, I have a log. I was like, oh, okay, you have a log. Have you talked to the other person about the log? Like specifically called out each thing and given that person a chance to respond, to show you who he is. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, you know, I was like, no, you're already bullshitting me.
Yeah.
You're already, no. Because without presenting the other person your offense, your hurt, your pain, and then giving them a chance to show you whether they give a damn or not,
right?
You cannot make a judgment on that person without that moment, that honest moment of, hey, you hurt me.
Yeah.
Did you mean it? Did you not? What did you really mean by it? And if the person meant it, they ain't gonna have no answer for you. They're like, oh, well, you know, I did it. Or they'll respond like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I did not mean to do that. And then your offense can go away. Mm-hmm. But you're holding all this pain and you're just logging it. Like your body, your mind is logging it. And so most women, most men, I feel they don't think that it's even realistic to practice love, because I don't think they know how to practice forgiveness. Or I don't think they know. And I'm glad that God has given me this, the innate ability to understand that I am a piece of crap. I have hurt so many people. Where do I find a moral, righteous high ground to then stand and look at Ange or anyone else and be like, ugh, I can't believe you hurt me. Let me hold this against you. Mm-hmm. When I know who I hurt and how many times I hurt my own wife or how many times I've hurt my friends, mm-hmm. I just don't have the capacity in me to be morally like, upset at you when I know at some point or another this week, I'm gonna piss somebody off. I'm gonna offend somebody. I'm gonna do something dumb and I'm gonna need grace.
Right.
But a lot of people don't have that. They only see what they're doing right.
Right.
Not what they're doing wrong.
Right.
But they easily see what you're doing wrong and how it's affecting me. So is there like, I tell people to just be honest and stop bullshitting yourself. That's me. And that may be way too harsh. But is there a step one to basically, what's the right term? Lower down that wall. Mm-hmm. Disarm.
Yeah.
Disarm yourself.
Well, I was that girl. I was like, if we were in a fight, I was not going to back down. My walls were up. I would project everything onto him. You are the reason. It's you. It's you. It's you. And in those moments, you are in fight or flight. So in those moments, you are your circuitry, your brain has shut off the synapses for connection. So when you practice gratitude, gratitude actually turns the synapses back on in your brain for connection. I mean, like we would be in a fight and I was shut down. I hate you. I feel no connection between us. I'm retracting all of my heart, all of my energies. I'm pulling it back in and I'm protecting myself. But what gratitude does is gratitude actually, this is why I think scripture says, enter in with the gates with thanksgiving and praise, because gratitude turns on the synapses in your brains for connection. So I always tell people, don't wait until it's kind of like going, well, I'm going to learn how to swim when I'm in a river drowning. No, you take swimming lessons before you are in a tough situation. So you've got to practice. This is why Luke and I, we practice love because we want to build up our energies, our immune system of love, that field between us of connection and love, because it's preventative. You know, Chinese medicine, they pay the doctor not when they're sick. They pay the doctor when they're healthy because they do the movements and they let the power of qi energy move through their body because it prevents them from getting sick. So you got to practice love before you get in that triggered relationship. That's number one. It has to be a practice. You have to practice gratitude with your spouse, with your partner, because it becomes a buffer around your heart for those moments when you're going to shut down. People think love will just happen. It doesn't. It is an act of the will.
When you say gratitude, do you mean like gratitude of one another or just
both and,
you know,
both and
I'm grateful for whatever
it can. So in the moment, say you don't feel a lot of gratitude for your spouse. Right. So you've got those walls and you're angry. Then I go to my daughter Loxley because that gratitude is my choice. Bitterness and offense is also my choice. And I can choose. That's the power of free will. I get to choose what's in my nervous system at any moment. So it's stubbornness and pride that actually keeps me from getting back to a place of gratitude if I'm going to choose to just continue. I'm not forgiving you. I just am not going to forgive you. Well, great. I'm poisoning myself. So I can choose to get to a place of gratitude in myself. Now, there's also things that you can do. Like there's points along your spine that literally can't take in negativity. So if Luke and I are in a fight, sometimes I'll be like, turn around. And we will go little circles really hard down the central line of the spine because they're neurovascular points that actually shoot energy into your brain to help connect you again. There's so many things that science has proven that we can train our bodies for love now. You know, so I would always say do the prevention of those triggering moments by practicing love, practicing gratitude. Luke and I stand in front of one another every day and practice love for maybe 5 to 10 minutes. He did it this morning and he's like, okay, I can go. And now we are connected on a deep loving level and our fights, we just don't fight anymore. And when we do, we're able to get our circuitry back to that place of gratitude and love because I, you know, we taught this at the intensive, but it's like the person who gets to their heart back fastest is the person who shuts down the energy of the fight.
Yeah.
Because if you're in your heart, remember my heart's 60 times more powerful than my brain and you pick it up in your brain. So my heart is pumping out this signal. So if I'm pumping out bitterness, resentment, hate you, you're registering that and you will close down as well. And it goes back and forth. But if I, you know, and sometimes you got to go away. Like Luke can be a maximizer and he's like, let's work it out. And I'm like, I just need a minute. We'll go. I'm like, give me just a second. And then I'm responsible for going away and cultivating that gratitude where my circuitry turns back on, that vagus nerve is going between my heart and my mind again, where I can feel compassion again or connection again. And then we can come back together and have the discussion if something needs to be discussed from a place not of, oh, I'm closed down, I hate you. But okay, at least our hearts are turned on and we are connected on a quantum loving level.
Right. And you said something that I learned in psychology because I would tell my wife this and she never believed me because she would always, at the beginning of our marriage, she'd always say, no one makes me as mad as you do.
That's true.
And
nobody
I'm like,
will make, yeah.
But I'm like, what I learned in psychology was being angry is a choice.
It is a choice. However, our inner children, we have we have this psyche. If your psyche can get stuck in time and space if a trauma happened. And so usually anger that's bubbling up is, if you look at the Gottman, Gottman is a, he's a brilliant psychiatrist or psychologist that did, he does like couples counseling. But there's the Gottman anger iceberg, and you see this iceberg and here's the anger. And under it is this iceberg of like hopelessness and sadness and grief and despair. So usually anger coming out is because you haven't allowed yourself to feel what's really under it, which is deep grief or deep loneliness or deep abandonment or deep sadness. And usually it's like our unruly inner child that's never had a voice and we've never let them feel. So it is a choice, but you know, like your trigger responses are, there's deep layers, psychological
layers.
Well,
I say it because most people like Ange, which now feels differently. Most people will still hold that, that ideology that I am mad, I am bitter, I am whatever because of you.
Oh yeah, like, that's a projection.
You're the reason why. And so it resolves or it removes all responsibility from me to change the atmosphere. So like what you're saying, it's like you feel like it's up to you to stop, choose to be grateful, choose to be loving, to get rid of whoever comes back first, to get rid of this negativity, to get this possibility of us just going off a cliff. And I feel like most people feel like their offense, their hurt, their whatever is
justified.
Is justified because it's the other person. Whether they meant, and me, for some reason, that one psychology class in freaking college, I just believed them.
Great.
And so I've always lived my life like a lot of people from the church are hurt by the church. And I'm more like people have bad stuff happen by the church or been like judged or been like whatever. They're just this bitterness and it's obvious. Mm-hmm. Me, sometimes people may think I masquerade as such, but I'm like, no. I have zero. I am so grateful for everything the church taught me.
Yeah.
The church is like my parents to me, where I recognize that there's a lot of stuff wrong. They love me. There's a lot of stuff wrong because nobody taught them how to do it. Yeah. Nobody taught them how to do it well. So why am I gonna get so mad at this guy? You know, this pastor, this friend, this whatever, when I'm like, all of us are trying to figure this crap out. Just like my parents, I can't be mad at them for not being the you know, perfect parents because then nobody taught them how to be a dad or a mom. They just are figuring this crap out. So in the same way though, taking responsibility for the fact of like, all right, my wife doesn't make me angry. Like I choose to be angry with her. And a lot of times I choose not to be angry with her, even though she says or does some crazy ish. But I have to take responsibility of that. And most of the times I'm a reason for that, which I have to take responsibility for that too. But I feel like it's easy to just not take responsibility, blame the other person, wait for the other person to make it right. And if they don't, it just never becomes right. And it becomes this layer of just anytime now moving forward, you guys get an argument, your patience is a little bit shorter, your anger is a lot of bit greater. Mm-hmm. And you're ready to fight.
Yeah, that's true.
And always the thing, which I always tell Ange to like, that kind of gets, it's a trigger for me, is when she does bring up my Enneagram. She'll bring up my 8. She'll be like, but babe, you are, you know, you do this and you have been like this before. And I'm like, but babe, I grow. You pointed that out to me like a while back ago and I'm growing and I'm working on these things. Like I really am. But telling me that I'm this thing because of some past thing that happened 5 years ago is not really like a good thing or a fair thing. Like when we had counseling, she did that. Oh, Manny's like this. And I'm like, I raised my hand and I was like, can you tell me the last time I was like that? No, I don't remember. I was like, well, I do. The last time I was like that was the last time you told me I was like that. And since then, I fixed it. Mm-hmm. But it's so ingrained in you that you feel like it happened yesterday. And that's one of the things that I always ask her. I'm like, babe, why do you get so angry as if like what that feeling that you remember me doing, like as if it just happened? It's like as if I just did it yesterday and you feel the same amount of anger, the same amount of like, you're just ready to like defend.
Well, usually I would do the same thing. And you and women, we gather. So we gather lists and we gather pain And we taught this at the intensive, but Allison Armstrong, who is an expert on men, I recommend her stuff all the time. But she says, women, when our feelings get hurt and we don't feel like it's resolved, we feel like our, because our feelings are how we connect with God. Mm. They're how we connect with spirit. And so when our feelings get hurt and there's been no resolution, we literally feel cut off from what we're meant to do, which is to be connected to that feminine flow of spirit and bring it in and usher it. And so, you know, one of the best things that Allison teaches us, that we use the ouch card a lot. Mm. So if my feelings get hurt and something like, ah, because Luke is so strong and you're probably the same way as A, and you can just mow over us.
Always,
and we're like, ouch. So what I have learned to do with Luke is to just come up to him and go, ouch. And I don't say anything. I don't, you did this and it hurt my feelings. I just go, ouch. And I let myself truly feel it. Like, ow. And listen, when a woman gives a man her heart enough, like the authentic part of her heart, like the hurt of her heart, men love the opportunity to hit the, lob them the softball, let them be a hero, you know, like, ow. And maybe the ego and the pride comes up some. Yes, it does. But what Allison teaches men to do is just to say, I'm so sorry I hurt your feelings. Not, but I did it because, or now don't say this. Luke did this one time and I was like, ah. He said, what did he say? I'm sorry your feelings got hurt. Mm. And it put it like, it abdicates it's back on you. But just him saying, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. Just taking ownership, like I didn't even, maybe you meant to, maybe you didn't.
Right.
But love says, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. And in that moment, it clears out that dart, that like painful trauma between you. Now, as a woman, I'm responsible to bring my ouch to Luke.
Yeah.
And if I let them pile up, it usually bursts out into anger.
Yeah, because anytime Angela has ever just, as an eight and as a very assertive, I need to, this argument needs to be won by me, it's few and far between because she's as ballsy, she's as fiery as I can be. But whenever she's just been like, I see her tear up, or if she's like, whatever, I'm
it's
done.
Like, oh,
there is zero amount of fight in me. Yes. I'm not like, oh, good, I won, she's whatever. The second that she breaks down, or if she like
lets herself feel,
I am instantly like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Let's get rid of it. Anything that happened, I don't care. You're right. Yes. I'm wrong. Like, it completely disarms me because you're right. Like, there's, if you genuinely love the other person, the idea of them being in pain and you being the reason for that.
Yeah.
That
whether
is
or not
like,
you meant to or not, it's like, what can I do?
Yeah.
And that is choosing love. Like, I think the most challenging verse in the Bible was always, love keeps no record of wrongs. And I'm like, what? That is so hard.
Yeah.
But what Luke and I've learned to do, and he's like, you're so different, Krista, because things roll off of you now that used to bother you because love radiating out from my heart and from my being becomes a protective layer, that love does the buffering. Hmm. That spirit, that God in me, that love does the buffering where it's almost just, it's like this protective bubble where it just bing. And I'm like, do I want to let that into my circuitry? Nah. But I practice love now where I'm in this bubble of love where things can ping off. Where used to, when I wasn't practicing love and I was practicing self-preservation and holding on to that bitterness and holding on to that forgiveness, it's like you suck everything in and you have no protection.
Yeah.
And then things can get to you and ping and dart and hurt and knives can get in. And I'm not saying things don't hurt anymore. It's just, it feels different. It's like we practice love where love is between us so much that now love does the protection.
Yeah.
It does the buffering. But that is a conscious choice that we make every day to first choose love before we get to the tough spot.
Right.
And that makes all the difference in the world with everything.
It's kind of like going to the gym before you get the heart attack. Like,
yes, or going important. To the gym and just being healthy before you go to Christmas break and eat all that stuff so you can eat it. Right. You know, it's like, let me not fix myself because I put on 10 pounds. It's like, let me just live a lifestyle of health. And then the health does the protection and I don't get sick very often.
We have a hard time as humans doing things when we don't see the immediate benefit.
Here's the deal though.
It's interesting.
You will live with so much joy.
Yeah.
And you will live with so much love between you. Like what we have now, I pinch myself and go, I had no idea that this could exist on planet Earth.
Yeah.
Because I'm so... I have my individuality back, but we are spiritual partners and we partner together with love to bring something new to our family and to the earth, as opposed to I'm waiting on you to love me, to make me feel lovable. You know, I'm waiting on you, Krista, to affirm me, to make me feel whatever it is. And we have our own self-practice of who we are and doing the inner work. And then we practice love together where I feel invincible.
Yeah. Yeah. The day when we got back from the retreat, like the one thing that really hit me was we ended up, because what you guys were, you know, what we were learning was to be, I don't know, was it like a jar, a big basin for the other person that we're ready to hold, the container, whatever they had. And so when me and Aaron started doing that, we started practicing like brutal honesty, like absolute emptying of our dark self, all the crazy thoughts we think. Yeah. Like I unloaded all of them. She unloaded all of them. Like all the stuff that men would never tell their wives for fear that they're going to run away.
Right.
And the dopest part about it was she didn't run away.
She's like,
I didn't run away.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait a minute. I can literally tell you every thought that goes through my mind. Things that I have been taught not to, by the way, because even, you know, when I was in church, you know, a lot of my accountability friends would be like, keep this for your accountability partner.
Don't tell her that you struggle with
masturbation or you struggle with this or you're looking at girls and you want to have sex with this girl and you want to, don't tell her any of those things. Only guys can understand that. And then I started thinking like, and this was just recent after the retreat. I was like, wait a minute. So are you trying to tell me that I'm committing my life to this person and I'm telling them in sickness and health and there's things that I should keep from this person and only tell this dude over here who isn't committed to me? Yeah,
she
like,
feel it.
This doesn't make any sense. This is supposed to be my like the person that I'm supposed to be able to be closest fully
naked, vulnerable, naked, intimate.
As ugly as I am, give her all of it. And if she doesn't run, if she doesn't stay, that means... Yo, she's down and the same. I have to be the same for her. Yeah. So we just became containers and we just started practicing absolute honesty. And it rocked us because we're like, wait a minute. First of all, the thing that it made us feel was we're not alone in what some would call weird or your crazy thoughts that you are ashamed of.
Yeah.
Because you think if this person knows, she's going to be so mad at me. She's going to think I'm a bad husband.
Right.
But I told her all my ish. She told me all her ish. And I started laughing. I didn't even feel an ounce of anger or like, I can't believe you think those thoughts. I was literally like, holy shit, babe. You are as messed up as I am. Like, we're both kind of like messed up.
We're perfect for each other.
Yeah, like it made me feel so not weird, so not like whatever. And since then, we just kind of come to each other and just say, this is how I'm feeling. This is how I'm thinking. This is what went on in my head. This is whatever. And it is like blown our marriage up in the best way possible to where I'm like, I'm not afraid to tell my wife anything.
Yeah.
And that removes all shame. And anytime shame tries to come or masquerade as like nobility, I'm like, no, let me go talk to my wife about it. This is what I thought today. And she holds me. She doesn't make me feel weird. She doesn't like get angry. She doesn't whatever, because she's allowing me to grow as a man, as her husband, and is down for the ride. You know, with it in our sex pod, we had the same thing. Cause I'm like, when it comes to sex, I didn't know from the retreat, the amount of stories that we've heard from all these women and men that their sex lives are so wide. The spectrum is so wide on what is happening in people and in marriage. that now it makes me think I don't use the word weird anymore.
Yeah.
I don't use words like, oh, you shouldn't, or that's, you know, I wouldn't do that if I were you or whatever. I'm literally like, okay, sex, like relationship, is so fluid. With my wife, I have to be open for wherever my wife is going to grow into. Mm-hmm. Sexually, emotionally, mentally, like I have to throw away any inhibition or any kind of preconceived ideology that I thought was good, mm-hmm. but really it was just me pre-constructing a path that we may never go down.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm just like, no path, no anything. Every day I'm open. I'm ready to deal with it. I even told my wife once, I was like, babe, if you ever get the feeling of you want to go cheat, just talk to me first so that I can ask you, you know, why, what's up, who's the dude, what, you know, what is he doing that I'm not? Is it this kind of thing? These are thoughts that I've had because I'm like, cheating, like what you were talking about, cheating more often than not has less to do with I just want to go be with this dude and more to do with I'm either missing something,
mm-hmm.
and it's my fault. I'm missing something and it's something that you're not giving me. It's usually something in that realm than just, well, I don't care about you. I just want to go sleep with this chick or I want to go sleep with this dude. Mm-hmm. And so I literally am like, I prepare my mind and my heart to just be like, man, if she ever does come to you in anything, be the container first. Even if it's like the craziest thing, just be the container first and find out the why.
Mm-hmm.
Why is she feeling that way? What can I do?
What is deficient
exactly
in our relationship that she's drawn to?
That is making you want
to
go do that.
Yeah. And that goes back to the whole attraction thing. I mean, attraction, it's funny. I actually not disagree with your professor back in the day, or your college
president,
guy.
Yeah.
The engine, I think, is always going to turn on. You know, and I'm sure he was talking about like, don't start the engine and
physical, yeah.
Stuff.
Don't go over at 11 o'clock at night and be like, it's going to be holy.
Right. But like your sexual energy is going to turn on, or, you know, things are going to flow through your body. But just like a car can be used to go get my kids from school. A car can be used to go get groceries, or a car can be used to go smash into a building and run off a cliff.
Right.
So it's your maturity is your appropriation of how to use heavy machinery, of how to use this thing called attraction, where if she is attracted to somebody else, you know, I talked a lot about how I totally would get turned on when I'd see two girls making out. And mm-hmm. I always thought, oh my gosh, there's something wrong with me. And I was talking to one of the girls at the last women's our marriage event, and she had gone and left her husband and tried it out. She was like, I always was attracted to women. I tried it out. Now I have a lot of shame. I'm back in my relationship with him. And I just looked at her and I was like, you're probably always going to be attracted to women.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always going to get turned on by seeing two girls kiss.
Mm-hmm.
I am.
Yeah.
I am not trying to get rid of that thing in me that finds it beautiful when the feminine loves the feminine. Like
right.
It's just, there's something in me and that turns me on. But my choice is I love my husband. I'm in a committed relationship to my family. Love is a choice. It isn't just a feeling. It's truly a choice. And so with that, this is what I appropriate that energy towards. I don't demonize it. And this goes back to the shame of like, I'm attracted to other women or it's there. And this is part of biology and it's part of the way that I'm made up and it's the way God created our bodies. But now what do I do with it makes me a man or a woman? And what I do with it, I choose to take it and be committed to this relationship. So like, if Ange is attracted to somebody else or you are attracted to somebody else, that you have a safe container where you can come back together and go, okay, my biology is working and I feel deficient in something here and I'm feeling it over there, a connection to somebody. But my maturity goes, I'm bringing it back to you. And love says, I'm bringing it back to you. And I'm choosing to practice love with you by getting naked, by being vulnerable with you about this, which actually strengthens your connection to that person.
Is there ever a time within marriage that the other person, which we've talked about, because we've made mention of like, can you be in love with two people at the same time? Is it, and me and Angie have always, we've had this conversation too of like, is it loving to celebrate that part of the other person, i.e., you know, your husband's like, okay, well, you're always attracted to other women. Okay. Do you explore that? Do you explore that if it's like a genuine attraction or genuine thing that gets you going? And it's like, well, if this makes my other person like super whatever, do I encourage it in some way? Is there a safe way to encourage it? Should you explore it? Can you explore it? You know what I'm saying? Like, are all those things whatever? Or do you have to somehow just say, well, this is what it is. I'm going to pretend you're a girl, but even though you're a man. Or, you know, are there other options? Like, within, you know, I've always thought about what that scripture meant about the marriage bed being undefiled. And I wanted to like really like do a study on it, like what it actually meant. I'm meaning to. And I know back in the Old Testament, you know, having side chicks was a thing, you know?
a harem. Or,
yeah, it's not like...
I mean, the polygamy's real. It still goes on today.
Yeah, and I'm like, but is there... I've wondered, is there a place in marriage where if the married couple's like, well, if this is what's whatever, I'm down to try that. Is that a bad thing? Is that a scary thing? Is that a, you know...
It just... I am not the expert.
Right, right.
I will talk from my personal conviction. You know, I make decisions every day based upon what is loving to my temple, loving to my body, loving to my relationship that I'm committed to, which is loving my husband and my children. Now, if somebody got into a marriage because they were supposed to get in a marriage and they did it because they felt pressured, but they've been attracted to the opposite sex their whole life as a primary attraction. Sexuality is a spectrum. Mm-hmm. It is not just, I'm gay over here and there's, I'm heterosexual over here. And then most people like lie along the spectrum somewhere.
Right.
And there's so many different components to it. But if somebody has been gay their whole life and got into a marriage because they were supposed to, you know, that's a different conversation of saying, you know, let's talk about this. And should we stay in this relationship? Is this healthy to stay in something that is not my proclivity towards even your gender? I mean, that's a whole different conversation. But I think just... for me, just being like, well, women turn me on. I mean, I like penis. Like, I'm like, right. I want a guy, but it would turn me on to be with a girl. But I am a heterosexual woman who likes men. Right. And that's my main drive. So it becomes the choice of like if you have a family or if you have a relationship or if you want it long term, is this choice to explore this worth risking that this might crumble, you know, like if you're not, I have a friend who, you know, she wanted to explore polyamory and, she did it in the context of her marriage and then her marriage didn't last. It didn't survive that, you know? And so you have to make those decisions.
Were both people down? Initially,
he was down to let her bring a woman into their bed and explore it. And then their relationship didn't last. And maybe it wasn't supposed to, but you have to make that personal decision.
That risk.
Yeah. Of what... And the thing is that sex has become so tender, swipe left, right, calloused hookup in our society that the sacredness of what it actually does, which it merges two souls into one, it's the closest that you'll ever get to feeling the fullness of God. There's so much healing that can shoot up your spine as a woman, and the energies that rotate between you are so powerful. I mean, it's just bigger than like, oh, this was kinky and my fantasy and I got off.
Yeah.
It's really a beautiful, if you let it be, and you know, this is deep in like Taoist and even tantric tradition, which I thought was, people who usually don't know what that means. I thought, oh gosh, that's like whack sex and whatever. But it's like bringing God into every moment, especially your sexuality with your partner, and letting that, you know, heal you at a deep level. So if it's usually, if it's just like, well, let me just like explore this on the side, I always go, are you fully exploring love in your committed relationship first?
Yeah.
And are you practicing that? Because that could take care of like
whatever it is that's making
just
you
maybe
want to
like
try.
A side whim of like, oh, I wish I could get my rocks off over here just trying this out. And porn makes it so accessible to have all these like crazy fantasies. Like, because I had been raped and sexually abused in childhood and raped in my teens, I used to fantasize about being raped because the trauma woke something up in me, and sexuality had been aligned with like domination and fear and perversion. And so I couldn't even get off for the first 10 years in our marriage unless it was bad or dirty or harsh or wrong.
Yeah.
But that was my pain. You know, that was things that I needed to work out of that stuck trauma in my sacral chakra, which is like your womb space, that needed to move out of me to where I could actually experience love through the heart in sex. Most people don't even get to the heart in sex.
Right.
It just becomes like a lower, you know, your base chakra, like it's tribal. It's like, let's fuck.
You know,
but the heart, bringing the heart into a sexual relationship, it changes everything. It changes the orgasm. It changes your biofields. It changes your energy. It changes everything. And most people, they don't ever get to that.
Yeah.
We're just getting to it. And we're like 12 years in. We're just studying it and learning about it. And it's legit.
That's insane.
It's good.
I'm like, I'm getting there. Me and Andrew are 8 years. And I'm like, man, so there's more to look forward to. Because you usually think like when you do get stuck in those mentalities of like, not fully embracing love or practicing love and people that are looking for outs, you do miss out on the, I always call it romantic, when I see two older people, like old, like in their 70s, and they're still holding hands.
And they truly
something
love
about
each other.
That is like,
I know,
that's goals. Like, to me, I don't know how to get there because obviously we're still young into it. But my hope and prayer is always that, man, if I can get there, I feel like I will really have accomplished something in my life, because it's easy to give up. It's easy to say I'm out, and it is easy to just blow up your relationship in a bad way and just never try to put it back together. Right. But if I can make it to like 70 where me and Andrew still holding hands.
You can be with me and Luke, because
like
we're going to be those people.
Yeah.
Like, I can already feel it.
Yeah.
We're putting too much of our, we're putting all of our energies into practicing love so much. It literally can't not be that. And it literally takes 5 to 10 minutes a day.
That's insane. I'm going to get all the books that you
I know.
Talked about. I want to put
so
them
many.
On the YouTube, and I want to put them in the podcasting so that people are always interested in where we get our information from. And
The Energies of Love by Donna Eden and David Feinstein, The Multi-Orgasmic Woman, The Multi-Orgasmic Couple.
I'm going to put links to all this stuff.
Yeah,
so
there's
I'll get so that I know people are going to want to read all that stuff. But thank you so much for spending so much time. I know we're at like 90 minutes. I could keep talking all day long. Thank you so much for making time.
I love you.
I hope
I
you guys, I love you. Thank you guys for joining us. And enjoy this podcast. Subscribe, share it with your friends, do all that things. I'm going to give you links to Krista's everything so you can follow her and keep getting more of this amazingness that she's giving. So thank you. Love you guys. Later.
Shooting for the stars in a spaceship, floating. I was in a dream, woke up underwater. I could feel the heat, sunrise. I don't gotta ask, you just taking orders. Do you like it black? Do you want it Halle Berry? I'ma have some cream and a little sugar. That's a lot, hey. Caramel macchiato.
We can get coffee in the morning. We can get coffee in the morning. We can get coffee in the morning. We can get coffee after morning.
I bounce off your behind. I am in a constant state of feeling so sublime. Bring it on over, I can watch you sleep all day. All day till you wake from the deep space. Stargaze from the coop to the dream state. Wake up to the fact that it won't change. Baby, I'm so into it. Our bodies move so fluid. My hand inside your cookie jar. Ooh, damn, I had to do it. I get to acting stupid. I blame that nigga Cupid. He ain't had nothing good in mind except the fact that I got you. You the best part of waking up, Folgers. Never loved like this, mama told you. Leave all the hood rats, they ain't but a hood trap. You can see what you're really saying when you older. Older, but never fool. Foolish to think that you were the best thing in my life. So I ain't going nowhere. Babe, I'm here until we die. Yeah, that's sounding kinda morbid. I'm your darkened apple pie. You my salted caramel. Caffeinated, can't you tell? I love everything about you, Penny. I'm my vision.
We can get coffee in the morning.
Yeah, in the morning, baby. In the morning, baby.
We can get coffee in the morning.
In the morning, baby. In the morning, baby.
We can get coffee. Morning.
Yeah, yeah, in the morning, baby. In the morning, baby.
We can get coffee after morning.
Yeah, after morning, baby. After morning, baby. Sexy Comadina. Let's go down to Lima. She gon' have to find it on the Mac, cause this a place she never seen. An expedition of her senses, touching, tasting, our progression to the holiest of holies. Hallelujah, she undressing like a model. She a model of what women need to strive for. Top of woman, kill the game, a nigga come alive for. You know you is sexy, baby, why you being shy for? She say she ain't perfect, I'm like, why you gotta lie for? But what it mean though, she the one. I wonder white with a steeple. Girl, you know I bet on us, no casino. Yeah, you know I saw you wink with the people. Yeah, I know I'm being cute though. All your girls like, there you go. Why you act so stuck up? Cause I got the baddest girl and they ain't us. No, they ain't us.
We can get coffee in the morning.
Yeah, in the morning, baby. In the morning, baby.
We can get coffee in the morning.
In the morning, baby. In the morning, baby.
We can get coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
Morning.
Oh, in the morning, baby. In the morning, baby. Yeah.
After morning.
In the morning, baby. In the morning, baby. Yeah, yeah.
Things, shooting for the stars.
Shooting.
In a spaceship.
Float.
I was in a dream.
Yeah.
Woke up underwater.
Underwater.
I could feel the